In proportion as the structure of a government gives force to public opinion, it is essential that public opinion should be enlightened.
We are a nation generated by ideas, the beneficiaries of people who took terrific risks and who were a fount, if you will, of originality and ingenuity.
So if people have views that you find offensive, we can either silence them so that nobody challenges us for 4 years, or we can welcome them, debate with them, and try to hash it out, and make us all smarter.
So we're going to interrupt our Beyond Brutality series here for a bit. This is a kind of a makeup episode. A lot happened this week, both us hosts personally and definitely in politics. So we're going to release this to kind of memorialize, obviously, Justice Ginsburg, as is seen from the title, and then we'll be right back to Beyond Brutality. So Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away last week, and typically when a justice passes away, well, for one, none of them have passed away this close to an election, which is part of the conversation that we're not going to have. But there's normally at least some time to kind of reflect on that justice's accomplishments and what they stood for and how we should remember them. But, you know, when you pass away less than 2 months from an election and the sitting president probably isn't winning again and his entire justification for being elected and being reelected is the Supreme Court, by the time she laid in state, she'd already basically been forgotten, and the discussion had already become, well, is it going to be Barrett or not? Who is Trump going to nominate? Yada, yada, yada. And Trump hasn't even formally nominated anyone at this point. For one thing, I don't believe in fortune-telling, period. I doubly don't believe in fortune-telling when it involves the sitting president of the United States. He is a mercurial figure, to put it politely. So we're not going to deal with that. But I think it's worth talking about Justice Ginsburg herself. So Austin and I are going to talk a little bit about her legacy, and especially the parts of her legacy that aren't forming a part of the discussion on really either side of the political spectrum that we both think should be talked about. So first off, Austin, before we get into the big topic, are you drinking anything?
Yeah, I made an old-fashioned with Fernet Branca. I've been doing my thing of using Amaro options as the sweetener. That didn't quite work. Fernet is a little too bitter and thin and stringent. It's not truly an Amaro. It didn't quite work, so I had to add some maple syrup to balance it out. So I'm going to stick with like Averna and Braulio and Chinar for doing this.
Fair enough. I'm drinking a Bee's Knees. It was kind of getting like it was fall weather, but then it got back into the 80s down here, and I had some gin to finish off, so... Yeah, I like gin. Gin's a good hot weather drink for me. It's also a good cold weather drink. Gin isn't an all seasons drink. So that's what I'm having. My next question for you, beyond what we're drinking, is about Justice Ginsburg. You've mentioned a couple of times in the podcast before that, you know, you have a pretty favorable opinion about her, and that's not something, especially after her passing, that seems to be allowed as an opinion to anyone even slightly right of center, unless they kind of use her as an excuse to hate on the president. Generally, people talk about her, you know, her legacy of being pro-abortion rights or anti-gun, and that's all that there is about Justice Ginsburg. But I know you've talked in the past, and I'd like you to talk a little bit now. What do you see the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg being, and why do you have the opinion that we should look at her a little more favorably and go beyond the issues that everyone talks about when we evaluate her?
So while I really don't like law school, don't like law school, don't think that it really works the way that it should. One benefit of it is that whatever your political opinions are going into it, after you take con law and civ pro and criminal adjudication and any other classes that you might take that involve a lot of Supreme Court decisions that you have to read, you're going to come out with a different opinion of justices on both sides of the liberal conservative divide than you went in with. You're going to think more favorably of people who you used to think of as they're on the other side. And you'll probably not think quite as well of the people who you used to think of as being like your justices, just because in law school, you read constitutional law cases touching every subject, touching a lot of very important subjects. And what's reported in the news and what most people outside the legal profession are aware of is a very small selection of high conflict, high controversy issues. Abortion, gun control, major First Amendment cases like Citizens United, cases like Little Sisters of the Poor cases, and all of these are really important, but they're not everything the court does. In fact, they're a very small percentage of what the court does. For example, no one in the general populace is familiar with the bankruptcy jurisprudence of any individual justice and has formed an opinion on it. If you take bankruptcy, you might, which I did. Scalia was more right there than he was in other cases. I'll just summarize it that way. But before you have that kind of education, you kind of think like there's these four or five that are on my side and there's the four or five on the other side. And they're all kind of like it's one type and the other type and they're all kind of the same. If you read a lot of Supreme Court opinions covering a lot of different areas, you realize that they switch around quite a lot. I know the example I've cited a lot on the podcast is that you'll often find Scalia and Ginsburg together in Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment cases. That's one great example. Another one is if the rights you're talking about aren't gun rights, Ginsburg was a very reliable anti-government overreach person. Not when it comes to like government programs. Obviously, she voted with the sensible reason of upholding the Affordable Care Act, not the contrived, doesn't even apply anymore, Roberts reason. She's not a small government libertarian by any stretch of the imagination, but when it came to the government trying to do X and the individual having a problem with that or not being able to do what they wanted, she was a very pro-individual justice in a lot of circumstances. Property rights would be a good example. Civil procedure rights would be another one. And of course, my favorite example would be criminal rights, criminal justice rights. So I think even libertarians have a lot that they would like about Ginsburg if they read some different opinions. And I would extend that also to social conservatives. You have to realize, I mean, so many people who are all or are very pro-gun, which of course I am, but people kind of view that as their one issue, really only care that she dissented in Heller and McDonald, and people who attend the March for Life rally every year and only think about overturning Roe v. Wade obviously have nothing good to say about her. That's not a good way to view the justices you disagree with on those major issues, and you can't look at those issues and think that you're going to agree with Scalia and Alito and Thomas on everything. That was one of the big eye-openers for me in law school, was I actually disagreed with Scalia and especially Thomas on a lot of cases, and I didn't really expect to. So your favorite hot-button issues are important, but they are not the only thing the Supreme Court does. They do a lot of other important things throughout the year, every year, and you might be surprised which justices you agree with and don't agree with when you look into that stuff. So all that to say, I respect a lot of Ginsburg's opinions, both dissents and majority opinions, and I don't form my opinion of any justice as a person based on just the opinions they write, because I'm going to agree with some and disagree with others. Unless you're Alito, then I usually disagree with you.
I was about to bring up kind of, because I mean, obviously I haven't got an iota of your legal education, but as I got more and more into the issue of criminal justice reform over the last 3 or 4 years, and especially my specific area of coerced false confessions, police brutality, and plea bargaining and all that. But basically, you know, the ways the justice system tortures people without physically torturing them. And that does involve reading a lot of Supreme Court case law, because that's what we're dealing with as psychologists when we call for reform. And yeah, I had kind of the same thing as you, like, especially, you know, we talked at length the last couple of episodes about the Fourth Amendment and Miranda rights. And it was people like Clarence Thomas who, having grown up very conservative, he was kind of held to me as a hero. And yet he's the one who writes this opinion saying, oh, yeah, they know their rights.
Yep.
Like they don't need to be told. Like, why would we need to tell them what their Fourth Amendment rights are? And I'm like, that's absurd.
He's also pretty bad when it comes to plea deal negotiations. I remember I very vehemently disagreed with him in that area, especially when he was winning.
Yet when it comes to things like Fourth Amendment rights, I mean, they're one of the biggest Fourth Amendment cases, period. And I'll link to an article from the Cato Institute about this. because I, you know, this happened back our first year. In fact, I think slightly before our first year of college, Kentucky versus King, Ginsburg was the only Supreme Court justice to take the side of the Fourth Amendment and say, you can't just tell cops that they have the right to invade people's homes without a warrant if they have probable cause or if they have a valid suspicion or whatever. That is a death knell to the Fourth Amendment. Here we are 9 years later. The lady got proved right, but it was an 8-1 decision.
Background for this case. This is basically, if anyone's familiar with the fact that cops can basically say, I smell marijuana, and that's an instant permission to themselves to search your vehicle or your house. That's this case.
And yet it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG herself, who's taking the side of the little guy. And I'll say that, at least from my opinion on the issue of criminal justice broadly, I don't think you can say there's such a thing as a good justice, quote unquote. Gorsuch is promising, but I don't think he's been on the court long enough yet. I would absolutely say, though, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I have some problems with her, especially when it comes to federal mandates about criminal justice reform. She liked government programs. She liked centralized power. So this led her to make some decisions that I don't agree with in terms of practicality. I can't speak to their constitutionality. I can speak to the fact they were bad decisions in terms of justice reform. But in terms of protecting the rights of the accused, especially with, as you mentioned, things like plea bargaining, she was the best one, hands down. She was certainly better than Alito, Thomas, and Roberts.
Yeah, they're kind of the least reliable. If you're a defendant, they're not your friends. Thomas can go either way. Scalia is generally reliable. But aside from Scalia and Gorsuch, you know, obviously we're talking about different time periods, your best friends actually were the liberals. Well, I don't think Breyer has a backbone, but Ginsburg, Kagan, and Sotomayor were pretty reliably pro-defendant. If anyone has been paying attention to my comments on Supreme Court jurisprudence throughout the podcast, I'll just give everyone the answer if you haven't figured out already. My least favorite justices on the court are Alito and Breyer.
Does anyone like Alito?
Really law and order Reagan Republicans. Probably like Alito. I also wasn't a huge fan of Kennedy, but I don't think anybody was. And Breyer, in my opinion, is kind of just there.
One of my professors once referred to Alito, this was in the context of criminal law and criminal justice reform, he referred to Alito as the Ted Cruz of the Supreme Court. And that has always stuck with me.
That is not inaccurate.
Again, I don't know anything about him beyond criminal justice reform, and I think he is...
He's not great on other issues either. This is supposed to be like a talk about RBG moment, but I will say that Alito is just bad. Obviously, the one thing that I like about him, he is very good for gun rights. He's authored opinions that are pro-gun. He's always on the pro-gun side of the few cases the court has that touch that issue. So thank you for that, Alito, but... You really need to go back and read the First, Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments, please, before you write another opinion. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but in a case that regarded the Westboro Baptist Church's right to protest and hold up their terrible signs saying despicable things at soldiers' funerals, he was the lone dissent. The entire rest of the court was able to figure out, yeah, we hate this speech, but that's the point of the First Amendment, is that it protects speech we hate. And Alito wrote a dissent that was basically like, my troops, my flag, you can't disrespect those, we can legally prohibit that speech. Which just, that was not a good look. In a beautiful opinion that is affirming the right to free speech by protecting speech we hate, being the lone dissent in that is not a good look.
No.
That was the point in law school where I figured out I didn't like him.
I mean, for me, it's just... I've had to reevaluate how I view a lot of the justices, how I view the Supreme Court. I mean, for a lot of reasons, what I've chosen to research, what I've learned about, you know, the field of psychology and law, being friends with you. These are all things that have caused me to reevaluate. And from that angle, I have to have a lot of respect for Ruth Bader Ginsburg because, again, even though I disagree with her on some important issues, on the non-sexy issues, the ones that don't get to be the front page of Fox News or whatever, she was a good advocate and she was a reliable voice. I also think there's just a lot about her that's personally admirable. I do remember when Scalia died and she eulogized him and it was a really beautiful eulogy. She was friends with the most conservative and originalist member of the Supreme Court were friends despite their differences. And she gave that eulogy and said how much they had enjoyed each other's company. Some of these photos have actually been being passed around again in the light of her death. There's a really funny one of them, like, I think they were riding an elephant together or something while they went, they took a vacation together. Them and their families went on vacation together. And I think in that way, and in many other ways, including her advocacy of women's rights beyond abortion, that was not the only thing she cared about, for crying out loud. She advocated for women's right. rights in numerous important ways.
Yeah, she was also very important for deciding, hey, all of, whether you like them or not, all of these federal protections we have for sex discrimination, they protect men as well. It seems like it would be now, but that was not a predetermined issue. That wasn't an obvious choice. That was not a set thing that, oh, of course the court will decide this way.
Yeah, and yet here she is with her so-called polar opposite, mm-hmm. and they were friends.
They're also polar opposites as far as religion. She was a relatively, I think, secular Jewish woman, and Scalia was a very, very conservative traditionalist Catholic.
Yeah. But I think that's an important symbol to have there. And I think that legacy of hers is worth celebrating in that she was a holdover from a more civil age of politics. I mean, she got appointed to the Supreme Court in 1993. So I was born. I don't know if you were yet.
I was.
Okay.
Well, it depends on when in 1993. Most likely.
Neither of us were actual functioning human beings at this point. We were, you know, sentience level was about equal with a puppy. When she got appointed, so you know she's appointed to the court out towards the end of the age of civil politics in a lot of ways, and I think it was important that she stood as a beacon of civility and as something we could rely on and look to, or should have relied on and looked to, as that sort of a symbol. You know, that time when liberals and conservatives, despite virulently disagreeing and principially disagreeing, could sit down at the end of the day and have a beer together. And I think that's the thing I'm going to miss about her the most, is that she was civil, that she wrote, you know, obviously I'm going to miss the fact that there was a Fourth Amendment advocate and that there was somebody there who actually cared about the issues of criminal justice reform that I care about, because Gorsuch hasn't had his chance to show what his views on that. And I would not bet money on Kavanaugh thinking the Fourth Amendment matters.
No, Kavanaugh to me, I said that Alito is the only member of the court I dislike. Let's contextualize that statement with the fact that when I was in law school, I was not reading Kavanaugh opinions. I don't think I like him either.
I mean, he wrote the Patriot Act. That's not a good look.
No, that's not a good start. We're off on the wrong foot here.
So for me, I'm sad Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. And it's not just because we are now in a frakakta mess of hellish proportions that has made an already awful election that much more awful. And we will discuss that certainly probably next week after the president has formally nominated someone and we've all learned why that person is the worst in the world, yada, yada, yada.
And there have been hyperbolic statements about how terrible they are, and someone predicts the Third Reich arising, and, you know, all that stuff has to happen first, then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. On the other hand, I would say that, you know, a lot of that stuff has been said about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They're painting her like she's the Wicked Witch of the West. And I'm like, okay, well, if you disagree with her on abortion and gun rights, there's still something you agreed with her on. She was very smart. She was very accomplished. You know, we've talked before about how we view characters from history and how we view people in history and across history. We did that a lot with Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, some of these other historical figures who we've found out bad things about later. And obviously, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, you know, she's just passed. We don't know how history will view her. But we all agreed it was unfair to summarize George Washington and Thomas Jefferson's legacy in things like slavery. But on the other hand, we can't ignore the horrors of slavery, so we have to balance it. So if you're really pro-life and you can't get past RBG's relationship with abortion, that's fine. But I do expect then that you're going to be consistent, and somebody who can't get past the issue of slavery has the right to call out Washington as an utterly awful, disgusting human being. Or we can just admit it's more nuanced than that. You don't have to agree with us about saying we liked RBG and we'll miss her. But I'm getting really sick of, you know, especially looking, you know, it's almost October and people have already jumped on that friggin' Columbus was such a hell of a guy train that conservatives, for God in his wisdom knows what reason, but I surely do not, like to jump on. You know, they are defending actually horrible human beings as somehow redeemable because you can't define them by the worst thing that they did. Like, okay, but then I expect Ruth Bader Ginsburg to be given the same courtesy. All right, guys, this has been our makeup episode. We're going to have another episode out. God willing, this all goes as planned tomorrow. So this will come out on Monday. Hopefully the next episode comes out on Tuesday. We know that a lot of people probably disagree with us on RBG. Certainly, we've been getting some interesting fan mail about the issue of criminal justice, and we will be getting to that soon. If you do disagree with us about RBG and you're, you know, want to have a conversation about it, do feel free to reach out to us at contact@libertysnarkpodcast.com or shoot us a Facebook message at facebook.com/libertysnark. We'll be back. Take care, guys.
This has been Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Snarkiness. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a share on social media or leaving us a review on your podcasting platform of choice. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us at facebook.com/libertysnark or send us an email at contact@libertysnarkpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening.